This morning we're going to talk about Chapter 6, which is all about network services. This is your file, your FTP, your HTTP, which are your file transfer protocols, and your hypertext transfer protocol, along with several others. And also in this chapter, they talk about two different layered models of networking. They have the TCP/IP model, which came first, and then they have the OSI model, which I believe, if I remember correctly, was established in 1984. So all that's covered in Chapter 6. And so they start out talking about the client-server interaction. And the first section that they talk about is client-server relationship. Now, let me see, who can define from all the way back in probably chapter 2 or 3, let me see who can define what a server does. Enginulu, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. So, what I'm going to ask is, if we want to take any website address, just we start with www. So, some website required not www, they require HTTP colon. So, why it is required exactly? Why don't we put www? Www means World Wide Web. So, why should we require HTTP colon?
What he's asking is why sometimes for websites do you need to put the HTTP colon backslash or slash slash and other times you don't. Most of the time your browser is going to put it in for you, but not all programs, I know the web browsers are good at it, but not all programs are good at it. So sometimes if you want to make sure and you can put it in. Also, not all straight sites start with www. Some of them, if you do that, you'll do it wrong. And what I've noticed is that if a site needs to be put in without www dot, then it works better if HTTP colon slash slash is put before it. That seems to be my experience. Most of the time, your browser is going to just take care of that for you.
I do the, like, if I'm trying to configure my router here, I will put the HTTP colon slash slash before the IP of the router, just to be sure that I know that it's going to get there. And then it doesn't come up and say, I can't find the page. So does that answer your question?
Yes, but still I could not come across properly. So properly we have www, so why it is required exactly? So sometimes, yeah, okay, if some website doesn't start with www, we can start with HTTP colon. That is the alternate way. So why some website doesn't start with www? So sometimes it's not open. Why? What is the reason exactly?
Brian, I think it is for the internet.
Well,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I'm asking internet.
Okay. There are some websites that start with www because they are, they're what's considered like a top-level domain. So, like, for instance, if you have, say, www.cisco.com, that's where you'd use the www. But now, like, for instance, if you're going to the Netacad website, if you put www.cisco.netacad.net, I don't think it would find that, because the Cisco .netacad.net is actually a subdomain, although it translates it out to the full cisco.com.
That is correct.
The rest of that.
That does not work.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
So preceding that, so, with www doesn't work.
Yeah, I kind of figured, because that would actually be a subdomain. And then, so that's where you would not use the www dot whatever, because it won't work in that instance. So it's basically boils down to, is this domain what's considered like a top level domain, or is it a subdomain? Which means, is the domain you're looking for under something else, like the cisco.netacad.net? So does that answer your question?
Brian, in short, you mean to say if you want to enter the home page, we do is at www, and if you want to enter any link directly into that home page, which we call it as subdomain, so we put it as HTTP colon slash, is it?
No, the HTTP colon slash slash pretty much precedes everything that is a website. Yes, that is true. But that's true with the top
level
domain.
Yeah, top
level
domains
.com
.com.
That.
Yeah, that is
yeah.
correct.
But the thing is with the HTTP, that specifies that you're actually going to get a web page, versus like FTP or some of the other different protocols.
Yeah, I think that will become more clear as the chapter
and,
goes.
Yeah, this will probably come. So does that help out any? Okay. So under the first section, which is dealing with client-server interaction, first thing they talk about is the client-server relationship. Now, let me go back to my original question of, can anybody define what a server does? Okay, I'm not hearing anything.
Does nobody know what a server does? Really? Just have
Actually,
a guess if
to
you're
be
not
very...
exactly correct.
Go ahead, Swarna.
Swarna here, Brian here. To be very precise, in a layman language, actually server it becomes the interface actually between two interface to connect between different hosts, and it stores the data and it exchanges the data. It's passing on and the collecting the information. It helps in doing that.
Yeah, close enough. Basically what your servers do is they will give out or they will serve the information or whatever other files they may have. So in this case, what they're doing is actually providing you the services, your web servers, or your FTP servers, your email servers. So they're actually providing a service. Now, your clients are the ones that actually will go in and say, hey, I want this web page, or I need to check my email, so I want to get on and check my email. Now, that's...
Ventrilo is a client-server thing, because we're connecting to this server, which is allowing us to actually talk to each other. But if the server wasn't there, we wouldn't be able to use this program. The program is only a client, and the client connects to the server. So servers can also facilitate connection between users.
And that's pretty much all there is to that section. It's just talking about the various things that the various services and the things that the clients can request. Okay. So let's see here. We have an activity that is you have to match the client's request to one of the following services. So we have okay. So let me do it this way. I'll give you the request and then I'll go and give you the services. I think that will probably be the easiest way to do this. So, your first client says, I need the IP address of this website so I can connect to it. So, would that be the service,
Let him read the services, please.
Yeah, let me go through the choices here. You have your services are DNS, Telnet, email. Any other answers?
Are those the three choices?
No, there's actually several more, but
Okay, what are all of the choices? Do not type in an answer until he's read you all of the choices, guys.
well, there was a reason I paused there, but your full spread of choices are DNS, Telnet, email, DHCP, web, FTP. Yeah, so that's all the choices. And for those that answered DNS, that is the correct answer for that one. Number two, which should be fairly simple because we talked about this one extensively. I need my IP address, subnet mask, and default gateway. So, which service would be requested? Very good. Very good. That is DHCP. Number three says, I need to transfer this file to a local server and make sure that it is received. Very good. That is FTP. All right. I need to connect to a remote server and run some commands. Let's see what we have. Oh, okay. Somebody's looking for the options. I was going to say, let's see what we have left. We have Telnet. We have Telnet, email, and web left. And yes, that would be Telnet. All right. So this number five says I need to request a web page from the web server. Very good, that would be web. And number six gives itself away. Number six gives itself away because it says I need to send an email to my friend. Wonder which one that could be. Very good, that would be email. Okay, good job, guys. That's correct. Yeah, pat on the back. All right, so any questions? I don't think there's any questions on that because everybody's got that pretty perfect. All right, so questions before we move on.
Yeah, could you please
Okay.
describe about the web server, sir?
Say that again, Anginulu. I didn't quite catch everything.
Yeah, could you please tell about something web server, sir, briefly?
Yeah, web server will be coming up in a minute. He'll talk about it. Yeah, he'll talk about that in a minute. Because it is in here. These are explained.
What's that? I'm still not catching him entirely.
He wants to know about web servers, and I said we'll talk about that in a minute. That's something that we'll go, that
Yeah,
he'll go into.
yep, web servers are coming up. They're coming up toward the end of the chapter, but they're coming up. So, yeah, okay. Yeah, at the like the very like near the last of the chapter, they'll go through a bunch of the servers and different things like that. So, we will get into web servers, FTP servers, email servers, and a whole bunch of other stuff later on. So we'll go through all that when it comes up. Okay. So obviously you do need protocols in communication between servers and clients and throughout networks. So what we're going to do is move on to a section that's dealing with the role of the protocols in client-server communication. Now, they go through let's see. They go through different protocols that are involved with communication. And the first being the application protocol, which defines format of requests between clients and servers. So this is like, for instance, this would be like your HTTP, which would be your application. This would be like your HTML, your XML, That would be the formats that are used as far as the language is concerned. So that's the application protocol. Next, they talk about transport protocol, which manages conversations between clients and servers. Now, there are two different transport protocols, which we will get into here in just a little bit. But I'm just going to give you the heads up that there are two different transport protocols. One is TCP and one is UDP, and we will get into both of those in just a minute. All right. Under your transport protocol is your transmission control protocol. This is one of the transport protocols. This TCP formats messages into segments, and it also provides control, excuse me, flow control and acknowledgments of packets sent and received. Like I said, we'll get into that one in just a little bit. We'll get into a little detail with it. Now, there is what's called the internetwork protocol, which I don't particularly care for that name, but anyway, they call it the internet protocol, or internetwork protocol. So this takes the segments that the TCP gives it, your transmission control protocol. This will take those segments and it will format them into packets to be sent. So this is actually kind of going down a little bit. This is going down a little bit later on in the chapter. They're going to talk about layered model, and this is kind of going through that layered model in an earlier stage. So, all right. So the last protocol is network access. This is your physical layer, and it will perform data link management and physical transmission. So, under your network access protocol, there are two different protocols. There's data link protocols, which format packets into frames, which are where your MAC addresses reside, and that's where they're used. And then you have your physical transmission protocols, which define how bits are represented and how they're sent and received on the network media. Okay, questions on that before we move into the two transport protocols? Okay, as I said before, there are two different transport protocols. There's TCP, which is your transmission control protocol. And there's UDP, which is user datagram protocol. Now, every common internet service uses one or both of these protocols. If you've ever gotten a chance to play with Linux or any other type of server, like an FTP server or an email server, a lot of times you will see entries in the configuration for both TCP and UDP. Sometimes these are used, sometimes they're both used, sometimes they're not. So it just depends on the applications as to which one will be used. Now, going back to the Internet Protocol, this is pretty much just concerned with structure, addressing, and the routing of packets. And it does actually define how delivery takes place of the packets. All right. So we have your TCP, which is your transmission control protocol, as I said before, and your UDP, which is your, UDP, which is your user datagram protocol. So both of these, like I said, are used in the Internet protocol for communications. These are both transport protocols. Now, TCP uses acknowledgments. So what happens is if you get packets sent, there has to be an acknowledgment for every packet sent. And if there's not, then what will happen is the sender will go through and say, okay, I didn't get an acknowledgement. Okay, where was I? Hold on a minute. Did we have a question? I couldn't quite hear that, but did we have a question? Okay. All right. So, going back to what I was saying, so your TCP, your transmission control protocol, uses acknowledgments. Now, if something is sent, if a packet's sent, and the receiving destination doesn't acknowledge the packet or packets, then they'll be retransmitted. They'll have assumed to be lost, and they'll be retransmitted. Now, okay. Now, if you don't need acknowledgments, then UDP is probably the best way to go, because what happens is it just sends packets and sends them and sends them. And if some are lost, well, then they're just lost. which is why sometimes if you have internet radio, or I think possibly even here on Ventrilo, you can, and I know definitely with
Ventrilo
Skype.
Ventrilo actually uses both TCP
and
UDP.
It does use both. Okay.
Internet radio is probably the best UDP example that I can think of.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I think Skype uses UDP too, but I'm not going to say for sure because I don't remember. When you go to your internet radio, if you lose packets, you know you're going to notice a slight break in the stream. But now, if TCP were used and it actually had to acknowledge everything, well, then you'd really notice it. That would be like your buffering, and that's just not good, especially if you're on a broadband connection. You have a really good song playing and all of a sudden it just stops dead. Alright. So, questions before we move into the activity. Okay. The datagrams are pretty much just if I remember correctly, your datagrams are pretty much just another way to say packets.
Is it another name for packet?
Yeah. So that's pretty much all that is.
Now, there is a difference, but then let's not go there right now. It's once you get into the OSIM model, that's when you distinguish datagrams, packets, frames, and so on.
And they don't go into that much detail. They'll distinguish frames and packets, but they don't actually go to the datagrams there.
Brian, can I ask one question?
Suman, correct? Go ahead.
Very, very good catch, my name. Yeah, coming to the question, you were saying TCP and UDP, right? So in that, you were saying some of the Sky people, some of the RFM people uses UDP. So why actually, is there any cost effective involved in that if you use UDP, something like that? Is there any advantage of that? Okay, acknowledgement is fine, I understand that. But is there anything else in the cost effective wise, while doing these kind of things?
Well, aside from the acknowledgement thing, if you really don't need the acknowledgements, which is with TCP, then you can get away with UDP. Because, like I said, it's just the packets are sent, and if they're lost, they're lost. If they, and the majority of them will get to where they're going. But so it really depends on your application as to which of the two you want to use. So does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, but not clarity-wise is actually still I have a question.
Okay,
I will ask
let
offline.
me take that one on. In UDP, you do have a speed advantage, okay? So if you're doing audio or video and you continue with using pure TCP/IP or other TCP, you're going to have a problem because you'll have acknowledgments flowing back and forth and you're going to have very heavy network traffic. Because remember, any communication you make over the network is going to have some overhead. UDP has comparatively little overhead. So you're going to have a speed as well as bandwidth advantage when you use it. But yes, you're prone to error, which is why even here if the conversation breaks, we just repeat ourselves and carry on.
I think that's what. Thanks, Pranav. I think that's what I actually wanted, I feel.
Okay. Let's take the questions in. Okay. Let me take Swarna first, and then I'll get Anjanulu's question about Packet Tracer. So, Swarna, go ahead, you're up.
Hello. Hi. I was just asking whether the TCP and the UDP are our choices or it's the choice of the application how it is designed.
That is pretty much dependent on the application that you're using. I don't think there's a way that you can actually choose between them, not as far as I know.
No, you're right. It's up to the developer. They'll decide what protocols. And in some cases they use both, some cases it's mixed, some cases it's purely up to the developer. There's nothing
But if you're the
you or anybody
developer,
else
then
can
you
do
have to
about it.
decide.
Pranav, may I
If
know
you're
what
writing your
Google
own
Talk
thing.
uses?
Okay. One second, Suman. Let me get Anjanulu's question out of the way about Packet Tracer. So, there's a program that Cisco really heavily likes to make reference to, as everybody has well seen. And what the Packet Tracer program does is it's like a kind of a network, it's a network tracing or a network kind of network mapping utility. So you can see
It's kind of a network simulator, isn't it?
that's pretty much what it does, is it will simulate networks and be able to show you everything that goes on with them. But as of right now, it isn't accessible until they. I think there's an initiative going on to make an online accessible version, but it's not up yet.
In other words, forget about it. Ignore it. Don't waste your time.
Okay, Suman, go ahead.
Yeah, Brian, what I was asking, what kind of no, either TCP or UDP uses Google Talk uses which one, TCP or UDP?
I think both, but that's something we'll have to really check. I'm not sure. The best way to actually find this out is to either check the documentation, especially the section for system administrators or something if there is any, or if you'd really want to get dirty, switch on the application and switch on a network sniffer, and you can actually see packet flows going from your machine.
Okay, got it.
Okay, let's get this nice, wonderful activity out of the way. What you'll need to do is either match TCP or UDP to the statements that I will read to you. Okay. First one says uses acknowledgement to guarantee delivery. Yes, that would be TCP. All right. Very good. So what about statement number two, which says better suited for voice transmissions? Very good. That would be UP. All right. So what about statement number three, which says does not retransmit packets that have been dropped? I heard two answers. Anybody else? The correct answer is UDP, because remember what I said, UDP doesn't use acknowledgements. So if packets are lost, they're just lost and the stream continues. Okay. So what about statement number four, which says use for applications like streaming video? And the answer is UDP, because remember, there we go. So your answer is UDP, because remember that's used for like more streaming applications, video, audio, that kind of stuff. Okay, and the last one, used for communications like HTTP. And yes, that would be TCP. Very good. Questions before we move on? Okay. So the next section in your notes talks about TCP/IP port numbers. So you have two different port numbers. You have your destination, which is used to request services. Then you have your source ports, which are used actually to start the conversation between the client and the server. Now, these are obviously going to be two different ports, and later on I'll show you exactly how they differ. Now, what happens with this is your source and your destination ports are put into the TCP segment, then they're encapsulated into an IP packet. Now, you have something else to consider. You have a socket, which is your source and destination IP address, as well as the source and destination port. So this is how you can have FTP servers and web servers and email servers all running at once with one box without having, hopefully without having any interruptions. They all depend on these sockets to keep things separate. And that's pretty much that section. If anybody has any questions. Okay, so we'll move on to the next section, which is application protocols and services. Now, this is where we get into the whole thing of your various applications like DNS, FTP, HTTP, and all that. So, first one they talk about is your domain name server. Domain name service, which is abbreviated DNS. Now, there is a domain name system, which translates your human-readable web addresses to IP addresses. So, would somebody rather remember www.qcat.org, or if you're connecting to it, 203.161.99.234, which would be the easiest one to remember? Yeah, and the only reason I know that IP address is because I used, there's a tool that you're going to use in one of the Chapter 6 labs called NSLookup, which does a name server. It's a domain name server lookup. So it will translate that www.qcat.org into the IP address that I read you. Yeah, I don't think you want to try and type in that IP address every time you want to access QCAT. Because trust me, that would not be fun. That really would not be fun. Okay. So, and I'm gonna go and actually tell you that the domain name, the DNS port that clients connect to is port 53. So anybody wanting a DNS query, they'll connect to port 53, say, hey, I want to know this particular IP address for this website, and the web or the server will come back with the IP address if it knows it. Now I'm going to get into that in just a minute. So as we've illustrated, the domain name servers have these tables that have your human-readable, nice friendly names and the IP addresses that are associated with them, like I gave you before. So what happens is, if the host name that you give it, if the host name that you actually give the server is known, then it will give you back the IP address. If it doesn't know the host name, it will query any of the DNS servers that it knows of. And if they don't know it, well, then I'm sure you've all seen the ping command where it says request timed out. That's what you'll get if the host name can't be resolved to an IP address. So, hopefully all the DNS servers are configured correctly and you won't get that. But if the website's down, well, you probably will, but that's another story. Okay. Any questions on DNS before we move on? Okay, so let's go back to I believe it was Anjanulu's question about web servers, because that's where we're going now. Now, there are two different protocols here. There's HTTP, which is your hypertext transfer protocol. These are your plain web pages that you're probably used to seeing if you go HTTP colon slash slash www.cisco.com. And these are the unsecure ones. These are the ones that are not secure. And this is on port 80. Now, these actually will serve out HTML, XML, or XHTML, and actually PHP and Perl and a number of other languages will be usable. Because all it's pretty much doing is just giving you a web page. So, now the other one that is here is Secure HTTP, which if you look in the address bar of your web browser and you see HTTPS colon slash slash whatever the website is, then it is secure and it's encrypted between you and the web server. So, and that's on port 443. Excuse me, that's on port 443. And the reason I'm giving you these ports, there's a table later on that actually references all of this. But they give it in the text, and I'm just going to give them right along with the protocols. So, questions on the HTTP or HTTPS protocols? Okay, next one you have is FTP, which is your file transfer protocol. Now, what happens is when you connect to an FTP server, you connect on port 21. Now, once you connect, then it switches you over without you actually knowing it to port 20, which is where all of your transfers take place. So that kind of happens behind the scenes without you knowing it. And that's pretty much all there is to that. So, any questions there?
Why does it switch to port 20?
When you connect, your initial session will open on port 21. Then what happens is any transfers that are done on port 20. So then, if I'm not entirely mistaken, that will pretty much free up another connection to be opened up there. I think is why that's done. But I'd have to actually look into that a little bit more. I'm thinking that would be the answer to your question.
I mean, the way you actually find out, I mean, that's a protocol level question, and what you need to do is to read the RFC for the FTP protocol. It should be around somewhere. And FTP is probably the only one which uses two ports. One is a port, you know, a control channel, which is where all the commands go, and the other is the data transfer port.
All right. Now, talk about everybody's, well, everybody's favorite one, or mostly favorite one, email. So, there's three different ports and three different protocols associated with this. There is SMTP, which is your simple mail transfer protocol. This is on port 25. This is, I want to send an email to my email server or another user on the network. And it's also used between email servers. So, if for instance you're on, say, hotmail.com and you want to send an email to somebody on Gmail, when you connect in, it will go to, well, it will technically go to port 25, and then it will send your message, and then what will happen is Hotmail will connect through port 25 to Gmail and send that message on, and then whoever you send it to will go and get it with one of the following protocols. You have POP3, which is Post Office Protocol, and that is version 3. That's port 110. There are a few mail servers that actually still use this, and what happens is once you check your mail on this port,
a lot of email clients
will
still
actually,
use it, actually.
Yeah, there are quite a few that still actually use it. So what happens is, the text says that it's automatically deleted off the server, which I believe the text is wrong in that regard, because you actually have to tell it to delete the mail off the server.
By default, most clients are set to automatically get rid of it. There is a provision for keeping mail on the server, but you have to specifically ask that that happen, and it's not necessarily very reliable. Most of the time, unless you actually go in and think about it, you cannot, messages will be deleted automatically. And that's why they say that, because most people should just do that.
Yeah, that's true. There are checkboxes or sometimes radio buttons, depending on your email clients, that will ask you, do you want to keep this mail on the server? Yeah, well, that's where I'm going next. So the other option you have is IMAP, which is your, oh Lord, now that I want to remember it, I don't remember the acronym. Internet Message Access Protocol. There it is.
Internet Messaging Access Protocol, version 4.
Yeah, and that's like Sean said, that's version 4. This is on port 143. Now, in this case, all of your mail is kept on the server, unless you specifically delete it. And this is rather nice, because you can actually synchronize your mailbox between several devices, like I've done right recently between my phone and laptop. So it's nice for that, because once you wipe mail off, it's gone from both places.
Not unless you specifically tell it to. You can tell IMAP to keep copies for offline, but by default it's not going to. You are correct.
Okay, so questions on the email client, the email client and server protocols.
There are encrypted ports for all these protocols as well.
Yep, that's right. There are secure versions of these.
Yes, there are.
Which have their own different port numbers.
Okay. The standard SMTP and POP3 and I believe IMAP, your standard protocols are unsecure. So if you go in and you tell it in your email client, you go in and you tell it that you want secure connections, it will actually use different ports. Let me see if I can remember these port numbers off the top of my head. SMTP, I believe the secure port is something like 465. Is 597 used? I think it's 465 is the one that I'm familiar with.
It's probably in your table that you were talking about.
No, it's not.
Secure IMAP is 993 because I use it at work.
Okay. Yeah. And secure POP3 is 995 as best I recall.
But then Gmail sometimes uses its own not their own, but ones that are less used. So it's a bit confusing.
So that's that. Does that answer the question?
Brian, I have one question.
Okay, go ahead.
Can I ask?
Yeah, go ahead.
Recently I configured my mobile with the IMAP. I want to, when I'm deleting mails from my mobile, it's also getting deleted from the web server. What should I do?
That's the point. That's what IMAP is. That's why people like it, because it's synchronous. I'm sorry, Brian, I probably should be letting you answer these.
That's why
IMAP is so cool for people is I can be on my iPod looking at my Gmail, and when I delete messages off of the iPod, then they're also gone on my computers. I can have folders for different things. I can have a labs folder where I keep labs for student, for like the chapters that Grace is doing that I'm not grading. I file those away in a labs folder. And if I were to add that, yes, POP3 would be a good. But if the cool thing is you have all the same folders on the devices, and the way IMAP works, if you delete it from one, it's gone from all of them because you've specifically told it that's what you want.
Yeah, but I want my copies in web server, so I should use POP3, you were saying, right?
Yeah, if you use POP3 and you don't configure it correctly, then the messages will be downloaded onto your phone, and you won't be able to get to them from the computer. So you have to set it up properly.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I actually configured my phone to get my Cisco Vision email. So I have it on my laptop, and if I actually want to, I can check it on my phone, which I actually do, so I can keep a copy there as well. So if I'm actually out and I need to read something, I can read it. And that's IMAP. That's the IMAP protocol that they use over on Cisco Vision. So it does help out in that regard, because if I check it on my phone first and I say, okay, there's a couple spam messages, I don't need them, I delete them, they're gone, and then if I actually check them on my computer, I don't have to worry about re-deleting them. So that I have actually found to be really, really cool. Okay, and last...
Whoa!
Oh, yeah, really. Good Lord.
That was quite amazing.
Yeah.
Wait, a
Is
bunch of
anybody
students
still
connect
on
and disc what?
after that?
I am.
Yeah, it looks
still
like.
On.
That was a little weird, but okay. I'm gonna group these last two together, and you'll see why in a minute, because they have instant messaging clients and servers, and voice clients and servers. Now, both of these are kind of almost blending together. Your text separates them, but you know, you have Skype, you have AOL Instant Messenger, you have Windows Live Messenger, MSN, and both of these, I mean, all of these have features of both. Your voice clients connect, and you can use like a microphone speakers to connect, and then you have your instant messaging clients, which you actually type. But like I said, everything's kind of blending together now. So that's why I want to kind of group them together. That and their ports that you connect to vary based on the clients that you are connecting with. So Skype has different ports that it connects to than AOL Instant Messenger or Windows Live Messenger or MSN.
Or Bitwise.
Or any of the others out there.
Just to throw one out that most people don't know about. Oh my gosh.
I think we have some internet issues over there, don't we? Okay, any questions on any of the application protocols?
Did you specifically mention any instant messaging protocol, like we have SMTP or POP3 for emails? What are the protocols?
Could you get
for
just a little closer to your microphone?
What are the specific protocols, like we have POP3 for emails, so what are the protocols for instant messengers?
They're proprietary.
There aren't any. Yeah, they're specific to the instant messaging or the voice messaging programs that you're using. So there's not any specific or there's not any general protocols that are used.
Oh, well, they would still use like TCP and stuff though. But as far as they don't have their own. I see what you're
I'm assuming that was Arpit that was asking that question. Does that answer your question? Okay, good deal. Alright, so, let's go, well, this is a section on port numbers, which, there's a couple of things in this section that I actually do want to cover. And this is where that nice little table is that shows you your various port numbers. So, you can have ports ranging from 1 to 65,535. Now, there is an organization called ICANN, which is the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers.
Actually, it's probably international,
and they're the ones that
but
are...
it doesn't really matter so much.
It might be. Tech says Internet Corporation, so that's what
oh,
I'm going
with. Oh, it
does?
Oh.
Yeah. So, they're the ones responsible for assigning and managing these port numbers. So, your well-known ports are the ones that range from port number 1 to 1023, which are all the protocols that we have pretty much covered. With the exception of the instant messaging and the voice messaging protocols. But like your POP3, your FTP, your IMAP, all that falls under your well-known ports. Your registered ports range from port number 1024 to... Okay. Who was it that said they can't hear?
He's coming through fine to me.
Yeah, I just adjusted my microphone a little bit. Is that better? Or is it about the same?
Well, there's not a whole lot we can do about it.
Yeah. Okay, so getting back to what I was saying, your registered ports are ranged from 1024 to 49,151. Now, this is where your source ports are used. They can be put right in here, and also sometimes destination ports are as well. Especially if you've seen chat, like your IRC, your Internet Relay chat. Some of those are like port 6667, or some of them are, I think, port 7000, depending on the chat room or the chat server that you're going to. Those would fall under this section as well. And then the last group is private ports, which are range from 49,152 to 65,535. And these are also used as source ports. Okay, and I think we've talked about all these ports in this table, with the exception of I don't remember if we actually discussed DHCP, but they use DHCP uses port 68 for the server and 67 for the client. So that's that, and then 69 is Trivial File Transfer Protocol, which I really don't know how much that one's used anymore. Yes, HTTP is 80. Yeah. I wasn't going to go through the table, because I think the majority of these we talked about. HTTPS is 443. And the other one we didn't talk about is your NetBIOS name services, which is port 137. Whoops, it's port 137. And then there is a protocol called Simple Network Management Protocol, which is on port 161. Okay, and that is pretty much all there is to that section. Questions before we move on to the activity?
Those aren't standard.
Is there a standard for BitTorrent? Because I'm not.
I don't think there is.
So I don't know. I'm thinking not as well. Okay. Yeah, I'm just looking at the activity here.
Hi,
Brian. Chandrasekhar here. Can you elaborate a little more on port numbers? How these ports are used along with TCP, IP, or UDP, kind of thing like that.
Okay, I think I'll take that one, Brian, if you don't mind.
Okay, have at it.
Okay. See, think of port numbers like television channels, okay? What happens is you have one IP address, but you need a way to segregate traffic on that IP address. So you have different kinds of traffic going to the same address. So your port numbers are segregation mechanisms, okay, for that traffic. Now, what happens is where TCP, UDP, this and that come in is there are certain port numbers that have been assigned as a convention. Okay, it's like an accounting convention. By convention, SNTP will use a destination of port 25. Okay, when we are talking about these ports, we are primarily talking about destination ports. Okay, so if I'm sending a packet which is SMTP or which is a POP, I am going to talk to port 25 or 110. The trouble with port numbers is they are flexible. Okay, what we have said is that these are by convention. This is standard. This is what you expect in most places. Fine. Perfect. But these days, applications such as Skype or some of the other instant messaging applications
They use what they like. There is nothing stopping you from configuring email at, let's say, port 30,023. Won't make a difference. Only thing is, your clients will also have to be configured to the same port. Okay. And this is an obscure security measure that used to be used once upon a time, but no more. It doesn't really make sense. You can sort of scan across the entire range of ports. It takes time, but it's doable. Does that answer your question, Chandrasekhar?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So we're down to this activity, which give you some ports, and you'll have to match the protocol that goes with those ports. So, let's do this. We'll start off the way that they do this. We'll start off with port 161. Does anybody need the protocol choices?
You should probably give the protocol choices.
Okay. Yeah. Let me give you the choices here. Alright, so our first port is 161. The protocol choices are FTP, Telnet, SMTP, HTTP, POP3, IMAP4, DNS, DHCP, SNMP, and that's the last one. So, port number 161. There's a reason I managed. There's a reason I went through and gave the ones that I hadn't given before. Port 161 maps to SNMP, which is your Simple Network Management Protocol. Let's try 67. Which port does that map? Which protocol does that map to?
What?
Any other guesses? The correct answer for this one is DHCP. That is the actual client port of DHCP. Let's see. 53. Let's see, which protocol does that map to? Yes, and somebody put that down before. It is DNS. That is correct. How about port 143? Any other guesses? IMAP is correct for port 143. Alright, so what about port 110? Port 110. That would be POP3. How about port 80? I think everybody ought to know this one. Very good, that is HTTP. Alright, let's try port 25. Yes, that is SMTP. Alright, how about... we only have two more left, so let's try port 23. You're only left with two, Telnet or FTP. I think I heard somebody put in Telnet, which is the correct answer. So, last port is 21. And which protocol is that associated with? Very good, that is FTP. Alright, guys. This is the last section. Let's see if we can cruise through this. So, this is talking about the layered model and protocols. Now, what they talk about first is protocol interaction. And they talk about this thing called a protocol stack. Now, your protocol stack goes from your application protocol, goes to your transport protocol, and it goes all the way down through your physical protocols. And it's just it's basically just a bunch of layers that everything has to flow down through, and then once a message gets where it's going, it flows back up, and you can see whatever it is you requested. They give some benefits of a layered model. Now, the first benefit they say is that it assists in protocol design because protocols that operate at a specific layer have defined information that they act upon, and a defined interface that to the layers above and below them. That's the first benefit. Second benefit is that it fosters competition because products from different vendors can work together. Prevents tech, and your third benefit prevents technology or capability of changes from one layer from affecting layers above and below that. And it also provides common language to describe network functions and capabilities. Now, there are two layered models here that they talk about. They talk about the TCP/IP model, which is also called the internetwork model by your text. Personally, I prefer to call it TCP/IP model because that's kind of how it actually operates through. So, in this model, you have four layers. You have your application, you have your transport, you have your internet, and you have your network access layer. So your application layer pretty much stays as it is. It kind of tells your application, or it pretty much gives the formats that the applications need. Your transport layer does just that. It's responsible for going and actually kind of setting up things to be transported. Then your internet layer, which kind of goes and defines your, that's where your IP addresses operate. And then you have your network access layer, which covers your MAC addresses and the physical transmission protocols. And I believe they talk a little bit more in depth about that in your text. So, any questions on the TCP/IP model? And there is one other model coming up. Okay, so the last model that they talk about is the OSI model, or the Open Systems Interconnect model. This has pretty much become the standard for networking. So if you're going to do any networking at all, this is the model you're probably going to see most. And it is broken down into seven different layers.
We
This
have
is the
covered this one before.
application. Yeah, I'm going to quickly cover it though, since it is in here. Yeah, we did cover this, I think, back in chapter 3. So you have your application layer, which is responsible, like I said, for formatting for the data formats that your applications expect. You have your presentation layer. You have your session layer, which is the one responsible for keeping sessions open, like FTP and the rest of that. You have your transport layer. You have your network layer, your data link layer, and your physical layer. In this one, your network layer is where your IP addresses, that's where your IP addresses are used. And your data link layer is where your MAC addresses are used. And then, of course, your physical layer is concerned with actually sending stuff over the media. Now, there was a section that I skipped because it's basically talking about protocols, protocol operations and sending and receiving of messages. And I actually kind of rearranged this a little bit, but the basic idea that they're talking about in that section is that your messages go from the top layer, which is your application layer, down to the physical layer. Then they're sent along your medium. Then once they get to the destination, they go in reverse. And that is pretty much all there is to that. There is an activity here, but I think, yeah, I think I'm gonna skip that one. And that's pretty much the chapter. Do we have any questions before we got about 10 minutes, so I think we have enough time for the quiz. But before we do that, do we have any questions?
Brian, I have one clarification regarding OSI. Are you going to go very deeper about OSI in the coming session, coming chapters?
I don't believe they're going to go much deeper about it. You could go to Wikipedia, probably, and get a lot more information than you will ever want to know about the OSI reference model. And
the text actually does describe it in a bit more detail than Brian has just done. So you may want to go back and look at that. In fact, you probably should.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. I just kind of ran through it real quick, but I believe that the text does do a little bit better, a little bit more detailed description than I did.
Exploration 1 is really where you get into the real intricacies of the OSI model. But for this course, the text and Brian have pretty much covered whatever you need. Don't worry too much about it.
I have one quick question, Brian. How do we remember these port numbers?
Look at the table and try to do your best to memorize them.
You just have to memorize them.
That's the only way to do it. There is no
other
way.
That is one way, but the other thing you do is, the more frequently you work with all of this, the better you remember the port numbers. So what I am hoping you would do is, now you will go into the setup of your email clients and look at what's configured where. Do the activities, do the labs, you will begin to remember fair amount of these port numbers automatically without much effort. Okay? And if something breaks, that's your responsibility.
The other thing you could do, if you really want to, is go get a copy of like GRML or another Linux distribution and play with it. Because you will get really familiar with the port numbers by setting up your own little web server, your own little email servers. That may be another way to do it. Since I haven't played with it, does GRML allow you to set up that stuff? I'm assuming it probably does.
Yes, I think it does. It does. But you don't even need GRML. You try setting up the SMTP server on Windows, you'll be playing with all the ports that you want to your heart's content. You have an SMTP component which you'll need to install, but you're good to go. Or you play with a web server like Tomcat or Apache. You'll have fun with ports, believe me. And you try start to open them on a firewall, it's even more fun.
All right, any other questions? Okay, the quiz is only 9 questions long. I think we can probably get through it here without going over by too much. All right, Let's try this, and hopefully we won't go over by too much. So, question one. What happens when part of a message using TCP is not delivered to the destination host? Your choices are, and this is just an A, B, C, or D. So your choices are A, the sender resends the entire message. B, the sender sends a request to find out what happened. C, nothing. TCP doesn't check for any missing data. Or D, part of the message that is missing is retransmitted. Choose now. And the correct answer is D. Because remember that TCP will acknowledge every piece of every segment of the message that's sent. So, in that case, if something's not acknowledged, it gets retransmitted. Okay. Number two, I'm gonna do this way. You have to match the correct service to the statement. So let me do this way. I'll read you the first statement, then I will read you the services. So, first statement says a user types in a URL and the page loads into the browser. And your choices are domain name services, email, file transfer, dynamic host configuration, web service, or telnet. Yes, that would be web service. Alright, so what about a user uploads new files to his or her website? Very good, that is FTP. How about a user requests a website by typing in its name? Yes, that would be DNS. That is correct. How about a workstation gets its IP address automatically? Very good. That is DHCP. Internet protocols allow... Internet protocols enable users to send messages to each other over the internet. For this one, they are looking for email. That would be the correct answer. And the last one for this question says a network technician logs into a workstation from a remote site. The question for the one or the question for those who didn't get it was a network technician logs into a workstation from a remote site. That question actually is Telnet, because you're logging into a remote computer.
Brian, I have a quick question.
Go ahead.
So you said that the web server is going to get IP address. You said it's a DHCP, but normally all these servers will have a static addressing, right?
Yes, all servers will have a static IP address. What I said, or at least with that one, the one question that was about DHCP said a workstation gets its IP address automatically. So it's not the server, it's an actual workstation.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
No problem. But yes, you are correct. All servers, generally, I've never seen a server with a dynamic IP address, but most of the time your servers will have static IP addresses. Okay, this is another matching one. I'm looking to see which ones they're actually looking to match. Hold on just a second. Oh, okay. All right. Here we go. Okay. So here's what I'm going to do. There's three options here. So let me give you these three, and then we'll go through the statements. And not everything is going to be used, apparently. So, the terms that you have to match are DNS server, common DNS port number, and domain name. So, first item you want to match is port 47. And now, I did say that not all of these are going to be used, so bear that in mind as well. But the first item is port 47. Yep, and that does not match anything. Okay, what about port 53? Okay, what about Cisco.com? Very good, that is a domain name. That would be a domain name. Okay, so what about translates an IP address to a domain name? That should be the other way around. Yes, that would be
Your
DNS, or your DNS server. Now, whoops, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. The one that says translates an IP address to a domain name. I'm sorry, I was thought there was. Okay, that's my fault. The one they're looking for translates a domain name to an IP address was for the DNS server. Translates an IP address to a domain name isn't used. At least technically not here. I think you can do that with DNS lookup, but I think that's part of one of the labs too, so. Okay, that's pretty much all there is to that one.
Nice, took up
Not
more
quite.
quiz
We
there.
got about yeah, we got about five more questions, which we'll go through quickly. All right. Number four says refer to the graphic, but you won't need it. Which protocol allows you to type www.cisco.com instead of an IP address to open a web page? Now, the answers are A, DNS, B, FTP, C, HTML, D, HTTP, or E is IM, and F is SNMP.
HTTP.
Now, remember what the question's looking for. What protocol allows you to type www.cisco.com instead of an IP address?
HTTP.
Quite a few of you have it. It's DNS, is the answer that they're looking for. Because remember, when you type in www.cisco.com, which is actually what they're looking for in the graphic, what server does that go to first? Because the computers themselves don't know what www.cisco.com is. So it's got to go through your DNS server. And that's why it's DNS. Yes, HTTP does something different. HTTP is the actual protocol that's used to get your web pages.
Brian, but your question was what protocol, right?
Yes, DNS is a protocol.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, no problem. Okay, I'm trying to skim through the rest of this. Okay, questions 5 and 6 are both matching. It looks like. Okay, all of these terms are actually going to be used. So, here's what I'm going to do. You got to match the terms with their corresponding definitions. So, first definition, I'll give you the definition first, and then I'll go back and give you the choices. Your first definition is hosts a web page. Now, your choices are HTML, HTTP, HTTPS, web server, web client, and that's it. So it's either HTML, HTTP, HTTPS, web server, or web client.
Web server.
Very good. It is a web server, because that's the one that actually provides the service of hosting the web page. All right. So which one would request the web page? Think about it in terms of your client server. There you go. It is a web client. Okay. What about used to create web pages?
HTML.
Type your answers in the chat.
Yes, very good. It is HTML. All right. What about secure protocol that uses port 443? And yes, please type your answers in the chat. Very good. That is HTTPS. All right, and the last one is protocol commonly used by web browsers. And yes, it is HTTP. Okay. Question 6 says match protocol to a corresponding category. Well, here's the thing. I'm going to make this a yes or no because there's only one category. And that is protocols that are used for email. So, here's what I'm going to do. Just answer yes or no for SMTP. Yes, that would be the correct. Yep, that would be correct. What about FTP? Remember, this is used for email. So, FTP would be a no because, yep. FTP would be a no because that's file transfer protocol. That has absolutely nothing to do with email. What about POP3? Okay. How about IMAP4?
So just 10 minutes, I have small questions, sir.
POP3 is a yes, and so is IMAP4. Now, the other choices they had which were not used are HTTP, HTML, and DNS. And Anjanulu, you have a question.
Yeah, thank you. You know, you said FTP file transfer protocol is not correct for email. Why it is? Because, you know, through email we can send files also. So it is transferring files one location to another location. So why don't you think FTP is not correct for email server enough? Maybe?
Yeah, I thought that's where he was going was with the attachment thing. FTP is strictly for files only. That has absolutely nothing to do with emails with attachments. Yes, you can send
attachment also one kind
email.
Of file, sir.
What kind of file for what?
See, attachment also kind of file, nah? We are sending files through email.
Yes, but that is not FTP. That's like completely different from that's completely different from FTP.
If you don't mind, can you please give me a small example of FTP, like which kind of files we will be able to transfer to FTP, sir?
Well, one of the examples, is it okay if I answer?
Yeah, go ahead. I've got two more questions left, but go ahead and do the we'll go ahead and do this one real quick.
Briefly. One of the examples they gave in this thing that you've just been doing is it said a user wants to upload files to their website. You upload files to an FTP server and then so that they can be put onto a website. You're sending the files to a specific place so that something specific can be done with them. But you're not using email to do it. You're using an FTP client.
Oh, nice. If I put any folder, any file in my Dropbox folder, if I give, say, the particular public link, Dropbox link for other...
Okay, Dropbox is not... We're not bringing Dropbox into the mix because they're doing their own thing. That doesn't have anything to do with FTP either. So you can't compare those two.
Okay. We've got three more questions, which I want to try and get through really quickly because I know we're over by about 15 minutes. All right.
We did start
question
late
7.
Too, though.
Yeah, we did start late a little bit. So, what acronym is used for making phone calls over the internet? Is it A, IM, B, HTML, C, HTTP, D, SNMP, or E, VOIP? Answer now. Very good. That is, the correct answer is VOIP. And the question was, what acronym is used to, what acronym is associated with making phone calls over the internet? And yes, that is VOIP, which is Voice Over Internet Protocol. Good Lord, I can't believe the number of matching questions. Okay, so they want you to match the port number with a corresponding protocol. So, here's what we've got. Let's see if we can do this without me reading the protocols. If I need to, I will. So, let's try port 20. You need the protocols read?
Does anybody have any guesses before he reads, just to see if, because you guys have heard him several times.
Very good. That is FTP. That is actually a data port. So, yes, that is FTP. Do we have a question? All right. Let's try port 23. And port 23 is Telnet. All right. So let's try port 53. Port 53 is not DHCP. Port 50. Go ahead. Very good. The correct answer is DNS. 68. Is which protocol? Well, I can give it away if I said that it's the one that you answered last. There you go. Port 68 is DHCP. All right. There are, I think, three more to go. So port 80 is associated with which protocol? That is correct. It is HTTP. Okay, what about port 110? Port 110? Very good. That would be POP 3. All right, I'm gonna skip one and come back to it, but let's try port 443. And HTTPS is correct. It is HTTPS. Now, I skipped this one because I don't think we went over it like a whole lot. I know I mentioned it, but port 161. Let's see if anybody remembers that one. Somebody remembers it because it is SNMP, the Simple Network Management Protocol. Good job. Okay, number 9, last question on this quiz. Says, select three protocols that operate at the application level of the OSI reference model. So you're looking for application level protocols. And we'll do this as a yes no. What about ARP? Nobody has an answer on that one? Okay, yeah, it is not. That is not one of them that operates at the application level. What about TCP? That does not. TCP operates at the transport level. That's a transport level protocol. Let's try, what about DSL? We have one yes, one no. Does anybody else want to take a guess?
It is layer one.
That DSL is not one of the answers. That's actually a type of internet connection, so that doesn't fall in anywhere on the OSI reference model. Okay, what about FTP?
Okay,
It
what
is
about
layer one, no,
FTP?
Brian. Excuse me, Brian. It is a layer one, right?
I'm not sure which layer that would actually fall under, because that's actually a way to connect to the internet.
They just threw that one in there to confuse you. I I guess it could. I wouldn't even call it physical, actually, now that I think about it.
No, I wouldn't either. And FTP is one of the three that you're looking for. So, what about POP3? Yes, POP3 does operate at the application level. And the last one is DHCP. Very good, that does operate at the application level. So that is your third one. And on that note, there we go. Okay, on that note, lecture's done, and I am going to, well, do you have any questions before I stop recording?
Brian, where I can find all these layer-wise protocols?
They should show up in the notes. In fact, there are some examples that actually use like HTTP, and I'm not sure about FTP, but that is one of the application layer protocols. But they should be in your notes. When I read through them this afternoon and this morning, they should be there.
Well, I'm sure they're in there because they wouldn't have just given you quiz questions on things that aren't in the chapter.
All right. Anything else before I stop recording?